This episode is proudly sponsored by The Helix, a new innovation district located in New Brunswick, New Jersey, the heart of the Northeast Corridor. The Helix provides a critical ecosystem for innovation by offering a range of physical environments, a vibrant community of leading innovators, and a strategic central location on the Northeast Corridor. The Helix will uniquely mix workspaces, classrooms, laboratories, venues, and collaborative environments, creating a dynamic community and setting for innovative minds. Universities, startups, Fortune 500 companies, entrepreneurs, researchers, and many others will all call the Helix home. Thus far, the Helix has assembled a community of innovative private and public organizations, such as Rutgers Health, the New Jersey Innovation Hub, RWJ Barnabas Health, Hackensack Meridian Health, universities from Ireland and Israel, and others. The Helix is where ideas will come to life. To learn more, visit helixnj.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
From NJ.com and the Star Ledger, welcome to the Rutgers Rant, your one-stop podcast for the Scarlet Knights, with your hosts, Steve Politti, and Rutgers insiders, Brian Fonseca and Pat Lenny. Let's start chopping.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Rutgers Rant. Jammed packed. We got three sports. We got three things to talk about. We got a little wrestling. Pat Lanny out there in Kansas City having some burnt ends, having some ribs, watching some wrestling. We got some basketball portal stuff. We don't have any news, but we'll, you know, hey, plenty of speculation. And spring football practice, fellas. This is good news. We can watch some football. Greek Channel's group out there. We'll do a little preview of that. I think we should start wrestling, though. We got some actual things happened out there in Kansas City. First of all, Pat, give me what you ate. That's more importantly. What do we have dining-wise from KC?
I only ate barbecue for 4 days, obviously, as expected. And day one, mixed plate, so every type of meat possible. And then I honed in on just getting ribs from there on out.
Gates or which Gates, barbecue place?
Gates. Okay. All right. Gates every day. We tried to go to Arthur Bryant's, but the line was wrapped around the block. And actually the final day, there's this place, KC Joe's, which is in a gas station about 30 minutes from downtown, but they supplement that experience at a local bar. They have like a smoker and it's the same recipes and things. So I got to try that one too. So fantastic. Mm-hmm. Dining experience. Kansas City was a great venue for this tournament.
Really? Okay. Really good. Nice. All right. So we set the over-under in 2.5 All-Americans. If you took the under, you're a winner. That said, I don't know. Do you take some points off just because of, when you lose a guy like Saldano early, is that something that impacts your thinking here? I mean, take me through the whole week here.
I rode a full roller coaster of emotions and grading this Rutgers performance. Sometimes I was like, oh, that was horrible. They're totally underwhelmed. Then I was like, oh, they really did well to get to the blood round. They had those two guys win. They probably did what was expected. And then talking to Goodell at the end, you know, I was asking about the criticism and stuff. And I still have a really hard time figuring out where this all landed and evaluating it all, because it's like grading on a scale and there's a wrestling curve and you have to figure out what exactly is successful and what are your expectations going in. So my overall consensus was that this is about what was expected from Rutgers, and the Saldano thing was a whole nother animal. Obviously he's okay, thankfully. But that really didn't impact it all that much, because he was probably one of the outliers. He was the 21 seed, so it's probably unlikely that he was going to All-American anyway.
Brian, I'm curious what you thought when you read Goodell's comments. I mean, it was a great question that you asked, Pat. We've won at a high level here for a very long time. We're winning here. We're this close to busting it. He defended the program. He said he's not worried about the haters. I honestly don't know how many haters there are out there, to be quite honest. A pretty decent defense, right?
Yes, and I think he's in a tough spot because we kind of touched on this, right? Like, if I'm him, I would be kind of confused at the haters because this is a guy that saved the program that was going to die 17 years ago. He was a high school coach who literally saved the college program and made it a perennial top 20 program. And that carries some weight all the time. But it does say something when it's kind of been, as the critics say, stagnant. And I think it's hard to dispute, right? It hasn't taken that step forward, not in the dual meet season and not in the NCAAs. And it feels like with every season that the 2 years they had the national champions in Suriano and Ashnault are probably outliers and not the stepping stone that this program is going to get. I think the comparison that I've been thinking about some a bit this weekend is Steve Peichel, not in a grave sense that wrestling was saved by Goodell, but Steve Peichel took a downtrodden program, brought it up to new heights that if you had told people 10 years ago they'd be doing this regularly, they would sign up for it immediately. But this could be their Suriano Ashnault year with Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey. And then, let's say 7 years from now, they're in a situation where they make the NCAA tournament every other year. They make it to the second weekend once. They lose in the first round every couple. My point being, like, I could see a parallel discussion happening in hoops in 7 years. Sorry to bring it back to hoops. We're talking about wrestling, obviously. I thought Goodell's defense was interesting. I thought it was fair. I think he's in kind of a tough spot. And I think that. Some programs are just not going to become Penn State and Oklahoma State and Iowa. Maybe this program will never become that. And that might be hard to accept for a fan base that's seen the program take steps forward very regularly under Goodell. But I don't know if Rutgers is at a point where it can become that. I think it has a chance to once in a while have that one big year. I think that's the one thing that the fan base is craving a lot, just that one year where they break through and you feel tangible progress. I don't know if next year's. I know Pat wrote that next year's recruiting class is really good and they have a lot of guys coming back. Maybe that's it. But until that happens, I could see both sides. I could understand Goodell's frustration with the sentiment, and I can totally understand the fan base's frustration in they've been kind of doing well, but they feel like they can do better.
Yeah, it's just really, I think that was a really great comparison. Like, if you think of Rutgers basketball, where it peaks, and if it comes back to earth, what is Peichel's like long-term prognosis? I think that's a really good comparison. It's just wrestling is just such a different animal because at the end of the day, it really is an individual sport that we put this team aspect behind it and all. And when you think about it, like Cornell finished second. An Ivy League school finished second in this tournament, coached by Mike Gray, a guy who went to Del Barton. There are a lot of New Jersey guys on that team. And it just feels like, all right, obviously Cornell has a long stay, they have 20 national champions and almost 100 All-Americans in its history. It's a legendary program, but like if Cornell can get there and like what's stopping Rutgers? Like Rutgers has way more resources at this point. So that's the dream. It's like we can envision it. And I think Goodell has done a really good job to build it. And if you believe in his words, like that we're that close to busting it. He brought in some good transfers, good recruits. So they just got to get out of that middle pack right now. They're stuck at like fifth, sixth, seventh in the Big Ten. And until they can get into that top four, which is like perennially top 10, it's just going to be the same 10, 15 people shouting, Goodell's not doing a good enough job. So I think it's not stagnant. I think that's a bad analysis, but I think it's just really hard to get to that top 10 consistently.
What do you think's holding it back? I guess this is my question when it comes down to it. We talk about resources. Everyone loves Goody. I mean, you've seen it. You can win there. You've seen national championships. Certainly facilities. Not, I guess it doesn't matter as much in wrestling as it does other sports. Like I just don't know. Like I can't put my finger on what it is. Right.
Yeah, I can't really either. Like they've got, there's the argument they can't keep the best guys in New Jersey. Well, Brian Saldano was one of the best guys coming out of high school in New Jersey. John Posnanski was one of the best guys coming out of high school. They got Anthony Ashnault at the time, who was the face
The
of New
best,
Jersey
yeah.
wrestling. And then they got Nick Soriano, who was the next Anthony Ashnault out of the transfer portal. So like they've done a really good job of getting some of the best guys coming out of New Jersey. They've extended recruiting out to Pennsylvania really, really well this in this recruiting cycle. And I just think in big time moments, they've just underperformed a little bit, some guys. And I think whether it was the dual meets against Minnesota or Michigan this year, like Virginia Tech, those were all winnable. And it was just like in basketball, they wouldn't have hit a clutch shot. In wrestling, they didn't make clutch play at the end, at the end, or the clutch takedown. John Posnanski was in overtime with a chance to All American and just didn't come up in the moment. That would have been three All Americans, top most in program history. Mitch Moore was right. Like, it's a combination of so many different things, but the resources are there. I think the right people are in place. They're doing everything right. It's very multifaceted, and it's hard to look at a micro level, I think.
Take me through really quick. Next year, Dylan Shaver, this was his fourth year. Is he coming back?
He's back.
Is he's
Yeah,
back?
he's back. He's only
Slavikowski back? Is that how you pronounce it?
So Yaroslav Slavikowski is back. That
Okay.
was it, I It came out like the week before the tournament that he actually had an extra year of eligibility. So he'll be almost, I think, a seventh year. Like, he's
He's
been in
30.
college for
He's
seven.
32, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
He's
why he
got both
has. It's
that
easy to win.
Belarusian birth certificate. For sure. But he's like an incredible story, this guy. I mean, speaks flawless, better vocabulary than all of us combined. And like, you think about it, like, he's got a degree from Harvard. He's gonna have two master's degrees in the financial aspect. Like, it's an incredible story.
It is.
So we'll follow up on that next year for sure.
Right. Good job out there in KC. It's going to be interesting to see where that program goes next year in the biggest year of Rutgers history. Speaking of where programs are going to go, let's shift to hoops really quick. The portal door has been open, and so far, Brian, only exits. I guess that's not really surprising. We've seen some names out there that are certainly really intriguing. Some of them, finally, there's a little buzz to actual names of players who, as opposed to us just throwing darts against the dartboard. Where do you think things stands with that right now?
So I'll do a quick overview as quickly as I can. The outgoing names, no real surprises. The three reserves, Derek Simpson, Antoine Wolfolk, and Antonio Chole, those were guys that were probably going to have little to no role next year. Understandably, they were the first three guys to go on the first day. Cliff Omori and Moat Mag, as we have discussed over the past month, were expected to enter the transfer portal. They did. I think they would have had good roles in next year's team. Confluence of factors for both of them. They both decide to leave. No need to rehash that entire situation. But it will be interesting to see if Cliff Omori indeed does land at St. John's, which seems to be the early favorite for his commitment, and whether they end up playing each other in whatever, in the postseason or something, how that story would kind of evolve. It would be kind of cool. And with ingoing transfers, you're right. No names have come in yet. It's important to note the portal's been open for 7 days. So it's not like they've been kind of in the desert this whole time. There just hasn't been that much time. And there's going to be more names entering today after the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. And there'll be more names next Monday as well. Anyway, a name that's kind of popped up early, Zach Martini, a guy at Princeton who Rutgers fans should know, had 10 points against them in Trenton the first game of the season this year. He's played small ball center for them, but they played a unique five out kind of offensive game where there's no real offensive center. No one really posts up. They just have a bunch of wing guys who shoot the rock. They shot the second highest amount of threes of any team in NCAA basketball last year. So he's going to be the guy that if he does come in, and I think Rutgers has a good chance with him, he'll be kind of a spot up shooter. He shoots 38% on threes, which would be the best 3-point shooting mark of anyone at Rutgers under Steve Peichel, aside from Ron Harper Jr. and Cam Spencer. So he really fills that need. And I think, again, I think it makes a lot of sense. He's from New Jersey. He went to Gill St. Bernard's. He was Paul McKay's teammate. He fits a huge need of veteran leadership, shooting, and kind of can play that four spot probably next to Ace Bailey, if I had to guess, and a center. I still think they're going to pursue a center. A name that I mentioned to you, play JUCO kid out of in Texas. His name is Malik Ewan. He was an early target for them. They were in a good spot with him. I had a JUCO national writer tell me that they felt like it was almost a done deal. Then things kind of evolved, and as you can expect from the number one JUCO kid in the
Things
country,
kind of evolved is a good way of saying money, dollar figures escalated. Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
yes, when you're the number one player in JUCO, when you have a very interesting offensive game, when you're dominating your regional tournament and you're about to go to the national tournament at Hutch and do a great job, like I'm sure he will, you can garner some extra money, and I think Rutgers has decided to move on there. I don't think it's done per se because he hasn't committed anywhere, but I would be surprised if he landed at Rutgers. But it is telling that they went for a guy with, again, an interesting offensive skill set who can score at the basket but can take guys off the dribble and is kind of a more mobile guy. He's a 6'9", looks more like a wing than he does a center. And then another name that's kind of been floated around is Amari Williams, a guy from Drexel who we mentioned in last week's pod when we were kind of just throwing names against the wall. Is a two-time defensive player of the year in the CAA at Drexel. I think he would fit really well. And it's kind of more of that Cliff Amori role of a rim protector guy who's more scoring near the rim. He's going to have a lot of names after him, obviously.
About to say, his list looked pretty daunting.
Yes, and there will be, you know, Texas is a name that is kind of really in there, Florida. Those guys, it's going to be high competition for him. But if you do land him, he really does fill that mold that Cliff left.
It's fascinating because when you start talking about, and we've discussed this a little bit about what this team's going to look like based on who they bring in. My first reaction to Zach Martini was, ooh, and it's not just, you know, I loved his game. I love watching him. We had a great game down there in Trenton against Rutgers. You're right about the spot up shooter, and he checks the box. That's so important to me. I think they have to get a guy who is just going to be some veteran leadership presence. And I think he's a dude like that, like Matt Locke, who I thought would be great. I do worry about him defending and rebounding in the Big Ten. And this team was out rebounded with Cliff in a lot of these games in the Big Ten. Like, you start taking guys off and you say, okay, we're going to play a little different style here. We're going to, you know, are you going to get destroyed on the boards in all these games? Like, I just wonder about that.
Well, I just want to say, from a big picture perspective, everybody sees a guy from the Ivy League. They see another guy from the NEC, a kid named Jordan Durkak, who's the NEC Defensive Player of the Year. He's from New Jersey. That's another name Rutgers has kind of been associated with. And you think, why would Rutgers go for a lower-level kid when they're bringing in these 2 5-star kids? They should be pursuing Big Ten players, high-major players. And I think two important things to note. One, Cam Spencer was from a low-major team, and he was the best transfer they've gotten in the modern era. He was exactly what they needed. I'm not saying that's what Cam Spencer's, or I'm not saying that's what Zach Martini's going to be, but I think to dismiss a kid because he played at a lower level is a bit, you know, simplistic. And two, everyone wants to get these star power players. Like, Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey are the star power players. They are the guys.
Right.
Like, they need role players around them.
I'm not dismissing Zach Martini because he played at Princeton. I'm dismissing what he's like, a 6'7", 6'8". Powerful. Like, I'm like wondering who's going to rebound for the team. That's it. Like, I think he's a good fit, good 3-point. I understand it completely, but you put him at the 4, you better. I mean, I'm just looking at this team, how it's going to be built next year.
Sure. So I think with Zach Martini, his rebound numbers aren't great, but if you watch Princeton, he's the main box out guy. Like, he's the one creating space. Mm-hmm. So that a guy like Caden Pierce, who had the 17th highest rebounding rate in the country, can go up and get the rebounds. I found a quote of where Caden Pierce essentially credits Zach Martini for how well he rebounded this year, because he's the one that's kind of clearing out the space and letting others get it. That doesn't mean that Zach Martini is going to be this great rebounder. And again, this is if he comes to Rutgers. Let's not jump the horse right here, but it sounds like it's going well. But anyway, I think looking at the numbers is a bit simplistic. I do agree with you that, yes, shooting is the main priority. Veteran leadership is the main priority. But getting guys who can rebound and defend is also very important for a Steve Peichel coach team. I think you don't have to have everybody that comes in fill that role, though. I think you need a guy who can knock down shots above everything else. And I think Zach Martini fills that role if he were to come to Rutgers.
What about Mark Armstrong from Villanova? It's a name that has emerged. Do we think he is going elsewhere?
Mark Armstrong has not entered the portal yet.
He's not entered the portal.
This is a very tricky time, right? Because there are people who have entered the portal. There are people who are being speculated to enter the portal by Trilly Donovan, to whose credit nails just about everyone that he says will enter the portal. He had Clifford and Mawat entering the portal before anybody. But now we're talking about kids that aren't even in the portal yet, and we're asking if they're going to be a target for Rutgers when they're not even on the market. I wouldn't be surprised if Mark Armstrong is in the portal. I wouldn't be surprised if Aaron Bradshaw from Kentucky out of Camden is in the portal. It's very plausible, but they're not in the portal yet. And I would be surprised if Rutgers went after either of them for Bradshaw, because he's, again, a second-year player, so he doesn't have experience. Little production at Kentucky. He completely shrunk in the NCAA tournament, and I'm not sure he's exactly what they need at center. And with Mark Armstrong, he did play with Dylan Harper in the USA Basketball, the World Cup in Hungary this summer, but he's really more of a ball-dominant guard. He is not a great shooter. I'm not sure he fits exactly what they need. They probably do need a guard that can kind of create off the dribble, or a wing that can create off the dribble and just be a guy that does the dirty work. I'm not sure if Armstrong fills that role, but this is a problem in general. Here's the thing. We keep talking. There were 700 kids in the portal at the start of the weekend, 700, right? And I would guess about 200 kids have had Rutgers fans say, ooh, 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 Rutgers should get him. Rutgers should pursue him. We're talking about 13 spots and 200 kids to fill them. This is why it's hard to discuss all of this. And I think the approach I'm trying to take is, once kids are seriously considering Rutgers and a serious possibility, then we could discuss how they fit, because we're going to drive ourselves crazy talking about everything.
I love during these games, I was getting these texts like the kid from Oakland who shot 27 three-pointers against Kentucky. Like, can we get him? I think he's 37. Yeah, I think actually he played like 8 years at Division II. That's great. It's fun. Yeah. Pat, I don't know about you. I'm not sure I like the portal, the new world reality of covering this crap. It's not fun.
I've probably seen like seven high school basketball games in my 10 years of doing high school sports. And like three of them were Mark Armstrong. And I thought he was fantastic. You said Rutgers needs like a secondary wing guy that can create. Like, yeah. If I think about it, he kind of fits that in my mind.
He's not even in the portal yet, though, Pat. Stop speculating about guys who aren't in the portal.
I'm sorry.
We've got 700 guys as it is that we've only seen.
Signed... Signature prep, that is, not the Peacocks.
The Marauders. Mark Armstrong was probably had the ball in his hands a ton at Villanova. I don't know. I haven't watched a lot of Villanova. But I'd imagine he wouldn't leave a program like that where he had a pretty sizable role to play a smaller role next to freshmen. Like, that doesn't really make sense to me. And the other confusing thing about this whole process is you see all these lists of guys who have gotten all these schools reached out to these guys. But as someone's brought up to me, like, you don't know if this is a head coach calling and saying, hey, Mr. Five-Star, we want you at our school as soon as possible. Or if it's like a third tier GA that's kind of calling and saying, hey, man, what's your interests? What are you looking for in a school? Just kind of taking the temperature. So all these things kind of, it's weird. Like, some guys have seven low major teams and then Wisconsin. And what's Wisconsin doing there? Yeah. It's probably like their GA just kind of doing due diligence.
It's the Wisconsin U. I heard from Rutgers. Someone right now is saying, I heard from Rutgers. It's just Fonseca DMing him. That's what it is.
It's certainly possible. So I just think that all this brouhaha, and I understand, like, you're a fan, I get it. Wanting to, like, ooh, who's Rutgers getting? It's like fantasy football. It's all fun. I get it. But I had a guy, there was a kid on Dayton. I think he's from the Bronx. I can't remember his name. Sorry. But he shoots like 45% on threes.
It'd be good.
He destroyed they played Nevada in the first round. He like helped them do that 17-point comeback to win. It was super epic. Like, he had a huge showing in the NCAA tournament. And people were like, oh, he should come to Rutgers. Why? He's at Dayton. He's a stud. He just shoots 45% on threes, and he just won an NCAA tournament game. Dayton has a good NIL program, first of all, so I would expect him to stay at Dayton. But if he leaves Dayton, why would he go to Rutgers when he could get the pick of the litter of like Kentucky or Kansas or any of these schools with all the money and a bigger role? It doesn't make sense, people. When you look, I understand the excitement. Fine, get lost in it, but at least have some realistic expectations. And let's not like destroy the Facebook groups and the message boards and my mentions and DMs with all these names that are. I think I'm going to lose my sanity by the end of the portal season. I can't take this anymore.
Well, that's good to know.
Let me help you with your sanity here. I saw this piece that our colleague Adam Zagoria wrote that Rutgers should take caution in the Kentucky story with playing star freshmen. What was your guys' reaction when you saw that? And are you worried that that's possible?
It was not just that Adam Zagoria story. It was a quote from Calipari, John Calipari, right? I mean, that was really interesting. And it's relevant, right, Brian? I mean, that's like, if you look at that, that's the concern.
And Jay Wright, too. Jay Wright said that on TV afterward that he's not sure you can build around freshmen in this modern age, which is why I think Rutgers is making a concerted effort to get veteran players, veteran proven players that could play around them and kind of fill in the roles. Zach Martini is a guy, for example. I know we keep going back to him, but he's the first name that is pretty strongly linked to Rutgers. He played in the NCAA tournament. He played in college for 3 years. He was a full starter last year. He knows what it's like to win in college basketball. He knows what it takes. So those are the kind of guys you need to have. I don't think Rutgers is going to build a team. That's another reason why they wouldn't take Bradshaw. They're not going to build a Kentucky team that had three freshmen starting and like two sophomores in the rotation. Like, that's dangerous. I agree. Right. I agree with Jay Wright. And I think it was a very interesting angle from Zagoria, for sure. What do you think?
The other thing that Calipari hasn't done is he hasn't updated his offense in 20 years. So that could be part of the problem.
And Rutgers has clearly updated its offense, at least for next season. We know that for sure already.
Listen, sometimes no offense is very fun. I don't know if you guys watched the Grand Canyon Alabama game last night, but it looked like you went to your local park and watched a bunch of kids run around, miss shots, run up and down the court.
It was an AAU game. It was great. Yep.
It was awesome. Listen, it might be nerve-wracking to watch that as a fan, but as a neutral or even covering that, that would have been a lot of fun. Something tells me that Steve Peichel isn't going to run that kind of offense. So.
Yeah.
Experience the Heldrich Hotel, a luxury hotel that's perfect for both the business and leisure traveler. Ideally located within minutes of Rutgers University, the Heldrich is convenient to all the action and activities at SHI Stadium, Jersey Mike's Arena, and the Rutgers University campus. The moment you walk through the doors of the Heldrich Hotel and Conference Center, you know you're someplace different. A place with an independent spirit and a boutique vibe. A place where you can immerse yourself in your meeting or event as easily as you can the local culture. Located in the heart of the city, the Heldrich lets you experience all that New Brunswick has to offer. Whether you're coming to New Brunswick for a fun weekend with friends, in town for a Scarlet Knights game, or attending a business meeting, book your accommodations today at theheldrich.com.
All right, good stuff. So we have no, and then in short, long story short, guys, we have no freaking clue who's coming into the portal. At this point, we'll check back at the next podcast. Maybe we'll have some information. All right, shifting gears again, spring football preview. We're getting on the field tomorrow. Is that correct? Getting started tomorrow. I mean, obviously it is all about the quarterback competition. Finally get to see what they've got at that position. Our new friend, Ethan, the Greek god, is coming in. But there's more too. I mean, I think there's like a lot of it, almost all of it offense. AJ Cerase, I want to see wide receivers, offensive line battles. Defensively, I don't want any of those guys getting anywhere near the field. I think it's just stay healthy. But offense is kind of going to be fascinating.
It really is. And it'll be fascinating because the offense was so run heavy last year. It'll be so interesting to get that first look, see philosophically if anything's going to change, how the Dimier Millers, the wide receiver, or what kind of shift can this offense take philosophically? Or is it going to be the same bread and butter? We're going to hand the ball off 60% of the time and try to make easy throws on third down, which when you're a program like Rutgers, that should be your philosophy. I'm not saying throw the kitchen sink out here, but I'm interested to see if there are any philosophical shifts here in the spring. And it's probably still way too early for that, but something to keep an eye on.
Ryan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think a lot of that will be told on how good Dimier Miller is, right? Like how much support they'll get at the wide receiver position, how good Nassim Brantley will be. He obviously didn't play last year, but having experience a year in the program and kind of having a chance to learn might be able to benefit him. Has Christian Dremel taken a step forward? I agree. I think the backup quarterback battle is just as interesting as the starting quarterback battle. Is AJ Cerase going to be able to take over a Johnny Shepherd spot as the third guy and kind of show some early signs as the four-star quarterback that he is? I totally agree on the defensive stuff. I think that side of the ball is pretty much settled. So no real need to kind of go too hard, I would say. Offensively, the right side of the line is really fascinating. Are you going to play Reggie Sutton at right tackle? Is he going to be your right guard? Is he going to be your reserve guy for both positions while you start Tyler Needham at right tackle and Kobe Asamoah at right guard? Are you going to maybe get a guy out of the portal whenever that window opens in the spring after what you see in the spring? Who knows? I think tight end is kind of like a real prove-it spot for the guys that are currently there. They have a bunch of guys, but no one who's really the guy. And barring a surprise, I think they're going to have to go into the portal and get a late guy again, much like they did with Sean Bowman last year. And they're probably going to hope to get better results than they got with Sean Bowman. So yeah, just a lot of interesting things to see. Any young guys going to emerge? I'm fascinated with that. All the young wide receivers like Fama Touré, Dylan Braithwaite, Jesse Ofuri, Davon Fuse, or any of those guys going to kind of pop? Moses Walker at linebacker. Just so many football we haven't watched in a few months, and I'm kind of excited to see any updates that we in that time.
It's been a really quiet few months for football in a good way. Like this is you don't want a lot of noise out of your program in February and March. But yeah, now's the time to get on the field to see some of this. And I just feel like wide receiver, especially, and I feel like I've said this every year, but I've just got a feeling that that's going to be the most improved position group. If everything we're hearing about that is correct, if Brantley's the player they think he is, certainly, you know, getting the kid from Monmouth. I don't know. I mean, that's just, we'll see if that finally happens. And that to me is equally as important as getting a quarterback, it's finally getting some development from wide receiver.
It's really the chicken or the egg situation here, right? Like, was it bad wide receiver play? Was it subpar quarterback play? Definitely a little bit of both. There's no question. But I always think of when I thought of the wide receiver position last year that they wanted these experienced guys that could bring up the young Fama Torres and Ian Strong and develop those guys while getting good production from the veterans. So I think like this is a really important season to have guys like Dymir Miller and Nassim Brantley back to just steer the ship for these young guys and show them the way and then pass the torch when they graduate.
All right. A good transition to our questions from the insider folks. Jacob Allen is medically retiring. This is kind of a big piece of information that we've had been asked about him for 3 years now. When's he going to play? When's he going to play? Turns out he's never going to play. It's a very sad story. Got injured on a field goal, blew out his knee, five surgeries, I guess. Never set foot on the practice field. I guess this comes back to like, you know, if you spend all your life following recruiting and recruiting ratings, you know, it just stuff happens to young athletes. A sad story, now I wonder what people are going to ask about. Cliff's in the portal, and Jacob Allen is medically retired. That's we only have like 10 questions this week, and that's why.
Well, we'll get asked about AJ Serace and Ajani Shepherd 100 times over by the end of spring camp. Everyone's going to ignore the starting quarterback battle. They're always going to be curious. How does Ajani Shepherd look? Everyone talks about Ethan and Gavin. How does Ajani Shepherd look? How about Gavin Rupp? Those guys will fill in. I do feel terrible for Jacob Allen. Obviously a highly, highly ranked kid with a ton of potential. On a fluke play, it was an extra point in a blowout game, completely unnecessary for him to be out there, and it just ruins his career. He talked to Chris Eisman of the Bergen Record, who broke the story, and he went into detail about the five surgeries. It was supposed to be a 4-month recovery. It's been 3 years. Just unfortunate. And he could have been the guy that really solidified that left tackle spot. Obviously, they got lucky with Holland Pierce coming in and becoming this great walk-on story to fill it in. But maybe even the right tackle spot this year, right? He'd be a third-year guy who had been in the program. Just really unfortunate. But he's kind of doing what he can to make the most of it. He's becoming a student assistant on the strength and conditioning staff. He said he's kind of found a passion in that area as he's been recovering. So hopefully he said he wanted to win a national championship with Rutgers on the field. He can't contribute there. He's going to try to do that in the weight room. So good for him for making the most out of a tough situation. Hopefully this is the end of the Jacob Allen submission questions from him.
And another example of another guy, and this is goes back to Greg Schiano's culture, but another guy who wants to stay around the program, even though he's not playing. Just a little observation there about what happens inside that building. All right. Lots of questions about who's coming in the portal. Let's start here. Looks like many schools in the NCAA tournament have Division II and III kids that are successfully transfer up. Any idea if Rutgers looks at these kids? Thoughts on that, if that may be an option? We can't keep track of the to 200 kids at Division I. I have no idea, Brian. But yeah, I mean, sure. I think it's they're looking at everything.
Again, they were looking at the JUCO level with Malik Ewan. Mm-hmm. I think they are going to exercise all options. I think we've seen guys at the D2 level. Jack Grolke from Oakland, who torched Kentucky, was like a 5-year Division II guy, wasn't he, or Division III? Like, they're out there. Now, there's a reason he was at Oakland and not a high major team. All he does pretty much is shoot threes, but I guess you can find guys at that level that can come up. But it's a risk. It's a risk. I know I've pushed back on guys being nervous about NEC players and Ivy League players. I can understand people being even more nervous if Rutgers somehow landed a D2 kid or a JUCO. It is more of a risk than getting a proven power high major kid. That being said, now that Ewan is probably out of the picture, I'd be surprised if they went that route. I just think there's more than enough options at the high major level, at the Division I level. But this program has shown it has contingency plans all over the place, and they leave no stone unturned. So maybe, but I'd be surprised.
Another question we can't answer. Steve, there's one question on everyone's mind. How much money does in the NIL does Pikel have to play with? Thank you. I mean, somewhere between $37 and I'm going to go with $2.5 billion. We don't know. I don't think he knows. Like, I really don't know. One thing, let's talk about this really quick. It looks like, and I don't want to knock on wood, it looks like the Vegas tournament is moving closer to being a thing for this team. If that's the case, that's $1 million of NIL, which would be a big deal, big honking deal. Everything we've heard about Steve Peichel is he spends, like most college coaches now spend, a majority of their time dealing with NIL stuff. You know, other thing to remember is I think these guys, Dylan and Ace, are coming in with NIL money from other sources, which is a big deal. But otherwise, Brian, I don't know if we have any idea.
Were those $37 what you contributed this year, or just a random number you took off the top of your head?
That comes straight from my pocket, my hard-earned money, my coins. Yeah. I collect coins in a jar near the front of the door. I get to give directly to bench players for the basketball team.
I always knew you were a big Rutgers booster.
That's me. You got me.
Anyway, two things to latch on here. So there was a report yesterday from a Boise State writer about Rutgers potentially being in the Cayman Islands Classic. My understanding is that while Rutgers has been in discussions with that tournament, they've been in discussions with multiple tournaments. It doesn't sound like the Cayman Islands is likely to happen. I do think Vegas is much more likely to happen.
Well, Vegas is okay, though.
I think Vegas is a nice consolation prize, and I think it's much better for the program, like you said, to get at least $1 million in NIL, and if the reporting from On3 is correct, another $1 million if they win the whole thing. And that is where a lot of the NIL budget is coming from. That's a lot of money to work with. There have been reports this season, which, again, these NIL money reports are never really reliable, but the idea is that $3.5 million is roughly what a good high-major program has to work with in NIL. If you get $1 million just for participating in a tournament, I think that helps a lot. And another thing that helps a lot is that you have guys like Cliff and Mawat off of the payroll. Those guys would probably get some money. They're obviously not getting it this year because they're not with the program. So you save some money there. I don't know how much they were getting last year. I don't know how substantial it is, but it's something that you don't have to pay that you can use to pay transfers to come in.
Zach Martini, can you say the words, the Helix is coming? I know you can. All right. Yeah. So we don't have the answer to that question, but at $3.5 million, I certainly do not think if we're going over or under, like we do with the Wrestling All-Americans, I'm going under. I'm $3.5 million. All right. Bouncing around here. This is a great one. Connection. How does Shaheen Holloway being considered by Louisville impact Rutgers and New Jersey hoops? Pat, sort of fascinating. I don't know if you saw this while you were out in Kansas City, but Shaheen Holloway is a candidate for the Louisville job, one of three. I think that would be just a tremendous blow to Seton Hall if he goes. They're holding that thing together. This is my sense from being outside, holding that thing together with every thread. Have NIL problems there. It's always been a tough place to recruit in general. He's sort of the identity, the face of that program. If he goes to Louisville, that is bad news for Seton Hall. It should be good news for Rutgers.
I totally agree with both things you said there. Yeah, and I always think of, when I think of Seton Hall, I always think of the stability under Kevin Willard. And it was, you want to talk about Goodell and a stagnant program, Seton Hall got as stagnant as you could, but you can accept that at some level, right?
Like, sometimes stagnant is as good as exhibit. Like, yeah,
would be great for Seton Hall. Right. And they were, everyone at Seton Hall was so ready to move on from Kevin Willard because they had the face of the program in the, who just happened to become a national celebrity during what was the greatest Cinderella run of all time at St. Peter. So I think it would just be crushing. Absolutely crushing. And, you know, a guy from the Northeast going to another blue blood program like Louisville, taking that talent with them, finding those unheralded guys that blossom in, like, it would be devastating. I think that's the only way to put it.
For what it's worth, I don't think it's going to happen. I think this is maybe some agents manipulation, trying to get a pay raise or NIL stuff. I just cannot imagine Shaheen Holloway, who loves Seton Hall, who lives for that program, leaving after 2 years, especially after the awesome year they had that he squeezed every last drop They have like the second worst NIL budget in the league.
Well, does he not see that though? That's the point. Like, is he looking around like, all right, I squeezed every drop out of this and it's the NIT quarterfinals.
Listen, maybe, but I think maybe he has hope that
and we're just speculating here. I don't cover Seton Hall. I don't know. But I would just assume that he thinks he can build on this. Now, if he does go to Louisville, which again, I do not expect, Kadari Richmond has another year. Bring him with it. You know, that's a good start for a Louisville program that has a lot of NIL to work with. You talk about NIL. There are reports out of Louisville that Kenny Payne had NIL in abundance, and he just didn't use some of it. Like, he had no idea what he was doing. Like, he could have paid more players. He said, nah, I don't feel like it, which is why they were abject disaster, because he was not obviously one of the worst head coach hires of recent in recent history. A lot worse. If you thought Eddie Jordan was bad, imagine Kenny Payne. And
people were pushing for Kenny Payne here before they hired Steve Peichel. Honestly, God,
he was a great assistant at Kentucky, which is why Louisville hired him, right? But he clearly
big people, not just like crazy people, like actual people in basketball. Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, good job by Pat Hobbs to avoid that one.
Heck of a pecking order: Danny Hurley, Steve Peichel, Kenny Payne. One kind of sticks out from the others.
Yeah. All right, this is a great question, and it comes up all the time. But watching most teams at the foul line in the NCAA tournament hitting over 80% of, why can we not hit free throws, and what do we have to do to correct it? I'm going to broaden this out. Like, I watched a lot of games this weekend, and holy crap, like the offense you're seeing, like, and I think because I'm used to watching 20 games with Rutgers, like I am. Like I can't, like my brain cannot adjust to it. Like some of these games, like I'm watching North Carolina, the obviously a team of interest for me, up 12, and they're still running up the ball, up and down the court, trying to score more points. And my first reaction is like, whoa, what are we doing here? You're up 12 with 16 minutes to go. You got to slow it down. Of course, no, you don't have to slow it down. You're North Carolina. You can get five guys who can score, and they won by 20, right? I mean, it just comes back to that. Anyway, that's my little rant on watching some of these teams play offense, like UConn and, I mean, Gonzaga. I mean, I can go on and on. Colorado. I mean, all these teams you're watching. Anyway, I forget what the question was. Brian, talk for a minute.
I will give you a simple answer to a simple question. Why are teams in the NCAA tournament better at making free throws and running offense than a team with the worst high major offense in college basketball?
Tell me.
They have better players. It's a very simple concept, fellas. Like, if you have better players, you run better offense. You score more points, and you prevent other teams from scoring points on you. Having better players is the foundation to having better teams in every sport. So here's what you do. You get better players, which Rutgers is doing a good job of doing this cycle. It always comes down to, people want to blame scheme. They want to blame coaches. They want to blame rims. They want to blame everything. The answer is, these teams have better players. So get better players.
All right. Fred V has the women's basketball question. Morning crew, why does women's basketball get a pass when they lose stars? It's been happening for a while. Remember that Fab Five class they had, it went 2 years, lost them all. Not a peep was said. I guess women's basketball had a bad portal situation here. I know they've got a good five-star recruit coming in. Obviously, one freshman is not going to be enough to avoid another 8-24 season. Is Cookies Washington's program in trouble?
I always preface it by saying this. Cookies Washington started with a roster that had seven girls on it.
Yeah, right.
She did a good job filling this year's roster. I think of what Destiny Adams did for that team.
Yeah.
Coming back to New Jersey, playing at a high level. I mean, she was a great player this year. It's just, it's a great question with what happened under Stringer losing all those star players. I think that's a really, really interesting point. And did she ultimately get a pass? Yeah, it kind of flew under the radar. I still think Coquise deserves time, and it wasn't going to be a quick fix. You can't just turn around like that, but
there's got to be year three now. I mean,
there's got to be some progress next year. I mean, they went backwards. They went backwards this year, which is kind of unfathomable.
Yeah. So we don't have, I guess, to ask your question, I hear it. It's not under the radar, just in the sense that there's really not much to talk about. This is a very important year for that program to at least show some progress. It can't be 8-24. I mean, we got to start looking at 15-15, we get back to a point where you're competitive again. I don't think there's any heat under her seat yet, but this is an important year, no question. All right, those are all the questions we got. Anything else? What else do we got? Baseball, lacrosse, I don't know, track.
Baseball's off to a great start. They're 17-7. They just beat UConn in a series this weekend. UConn's having a bit of a down year if you look at their record. I'm not entirely sure if it's because they're bad or because they played hard teams. I don't know. All I know is that Rutgers baseball is off to a good start and looks to be on track to make the NCAA tournament for the first time under Steve Owens. So that's good. Have some stud players there. So good start for them. Lacrosse, both teams lost this weekend. I believe men's lacrosse remains without a win against a ranked opponent. They lost to Johns Hopkins yesterday. So again, I'm not entirely sure if they're out of the NCAA tournament picture, but certainly they're not off to a good start. And women's lacrosse, I believe, also lost. So not a great weekend on the lacrosse field. Track and field, the great distance runner, Alex Carlson, is reportedly in the portal, which is a loss for the track and field program. I'm sure
they can't even keep our milers. They can't even keep where's the money for the milers, John Newman? I got to mention him every podcast. I know he loves it. Where's the money for the track and field team, Knights of the Raritan? Losing your best miler.
It's great. Not just best. I mean, that could win a national title. Like, it is on the brink of going to win a national title.
Where's she going? Do we know where she's going?
She went to the borough this morning, Steve. How am I supposed to know?
You should know this already. Come on.
Listen,
55. We're recording for 2 hours. She's been in the portal.
I bet. Just being a track and field fan, she's going to land at a program like Colorado, where she's training at Olympic type level with tremendous teammates that are going to push her. I just Rutgers track is a great program. It's on the rise. I just think
Oregon.
You got to think of it as what are her goals? It's to get to the Olympics, and at the moment, like, she needs that next step. And it's probably for best for her development to take it somewhere, Oregon, Colorado, schools that have Olympians on the team, Kentucky, you know.
I'm outraged about this. Not about her. It's about the lack of good reporting I'm getting from Rutgers track from the two of you. That's all I got to say about that. I just have a higher level of expectation. That's all I'm saying.
Fair. That's fair.
Like, how am I supposed to know where she's going? You're supposed to know where she's going.
My pen relay streak was at like seven, and I let it slip. I let it go, and I hate myself for it. I wanted
that. Lost those sources.
Yeah,
that's how it starts. That's how the slippery slope starts. You miss one pen relays, all of a sudden you don't even know what a 4x400 is.
Exactly. And now next year with the basketball situation, the NCAA wrestling tournament is going to fall on the same weekend as the first round of the NCAA basketball tournament. And then my wrestling streak is going to be snapped as well. So here we go. He's in a conundrum.
Hey, you can skip the first round. They'll win it easy. You can come back to the second round in Newark. Don't worry about it. NCAA tournament wins are a dime a dozen.
Is it in Newark? Is the regional in Newark?
It's in Philadelphia next year,
too.
Oh,
man.
If Rutgers makes it, this is why it's important, one, to schedule a hard non-conference schedule, and two, to have a strong resume where you're not teetering on the bubble. Because if you get a high seed in the East region, you're talking about a second round game, a Sweet 16 game at the Prudential Center. If you're Rutgers, that place would be, that would be the one thing that it finally takes for them to open the curtain for a college basketball game in that building. And you'd fill that place up with Rutgers fans. So I think that's what's going to make the entire season pretty exciting, because every game is going to matter when it comes to seeding. We're going to be talking about bracketology in November, and it's going to drive everybody nuts. I cannot wait.
How to buy tickets for the Sweet 16 in August.
Get that post up right now, everybody. There's only like four players left on the team. Get that post up. I want to read that on NJ.com with an addition to five potential landing spots for the Rutgers Miler. Where can she run to? This is your week. I'm giving you assignments. That's it. All right. That's all we got, folks. I don't know when we'll be back. We'll be back. We have something to talk about. How's that sound? Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Rutgers Rant. To participate in the conversation and receive live updates about the Scarlet Knights directly to your phone, sign up at nj.com/insider.